Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, August 23rd, 2018. There's been renewed fighting between government and rebel forces, this time in northern Leech State.
So they attacked us, then we refund. Putin and pass up to their headquarters, their barracks.
And humanitarians are carrying out airdrops in remote parts of South Sudan.
If we don't have the access, then how do we deliver the food? And in itself, when you even by air, you have to prepare the communities and the authorities.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Despite last year's signed ceasefire, at least seven people were killed and dozens of others wounded, according to both warring parties, in fighting yesterday between army and opposition forces in northern Leech State, which was part of former Unity State. Both rebel and government military spokesmen blamed the other side for starting the clashes. We apologize in advance for some poor audio quality in this report from Demo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The government and rebel forces clashed Wednesday morning in two separate areas of Kwarjing and Gwit, a few kilometers outside Bentiu, the capital of northern Leech State. SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lampole Gabriel says government forces launched an attack on his forces and killed three SPLA-IO fighters and injured five others.
There was a lieutenant general that was sent from Juba and to make sure this issue continues. The violence continues. So they attacked us. Then we refund Putin and back up to their headquarters, their barracks in Kwarjing and killing their brigadier and nine others.
SPLA military spokesman Major General Lul Roy Kwong says four SPLA forces were killed, not ten.
Three officers who lost their lives. One is the late Brigadier General Benjamin Gawkot Machar. Until his death, he was the operations commander for forces loyal to First Vice President Gerald Kabamba Ngai. We also killed along with the general was Lieutenant Colonel Daku Bang, First Lieutenant Quid, and a sergeant.
Kwong insists the rebels engaged the SPLA, not the other way around.
It was the main military barracks for our army. It was attacked, and the place is called Kwarjing. The area is called Kwarjing. And the second area, it was also attacked almost at the same time with Kwarjing, was Pajambil.
Both Kwong and Gabriel accused the other side of trying to gain more territory on the ground just days ahead of the expected signing of a final 2015 revitalized peace agreement. Kwong calls the attack the latest in a series of violations to the cessation of hostilities agreement the warring parties signed in December last year and called on peace monitors to investigate the latest clashes. South Sudan in Focus was unable to independently verify the claims and counterclaims of the two warring parties. For VOA News, I am Demo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The food security situation across parts of South Sudan continues to remain dire, according to the World Food Program. The WFP says insecurity continues to hinder efforts by aid agencies to help hundreds of thousands of vulnerable people across the country. Waki Simon-Wudu has this report for VOA from Juba.
WFP spokesperson in South Sudan, Thompson Fury, says people in several parts of the country continue to use harmful survival tactics to manage the situation, making them more vulnerable to malnutrition.
People were reducing the meal portions. People were skipping meals. There was very poor diversity of food that they were consuming.
As many as 6 million people across South Sudan are still food insecure, according to Fury. He says the most food insecure areas include parts of Greater Upper Nile region, and that includes former Jonglei and Unity States. He says many people in communities of these areas are affected by the conflict in that they either don't receive public services or are displaced and cannot farm for their food. In efforts to help the most needy, WFP is carrying out the expensive procedure of airdropping food to some areas. Simon Kamelbeck is the WFP Deputy Country Director for Operations in South Sudan.
Access to certain communities at the time that we want to go there, because we keep track of the communities we are supporting, and then and we normally provide food either every month or every 2 months, or in some cases 3 months. But if we don't have the access, then how do we deliver the food? And in itself, when you even by air, you have to prepare the communities and the authorities and the different forces on the ground that the food is being delivered. But that can really have an impact. And we had scenarios that for weeks, even in some cases for months, we couldn't deliver because of the lack of security.
Kamelbeck says there is the risk that the food will fall into the wrong hands. Firi says the WFP expects food insecurity to continue in parts of the country.
The lean season has started much earlier this year than the last. We are concerned as well because of the continued conflict in parts of the country during this growing season. And we feel this might actually mean little or no harvest at all, leaving most people at risk. However, we are also hopeful that with the recently signed peace deal, it will translate into real change on the ground and people will be able to work and produce food like they used to do.
Kamelbeck says the only comprehensive solution to food insecurity is to restore lasting peace and stability in South Sudan.
It's very difficult to even start talking about recovery and development when there's no peace. Yes, in those very remote areas where infrastructure is very poor, people are living a very, let's say, maintaining a very basic livelihood. It's not easy to and people have a very kind of traditional way of living. It will take time to introduce other livelihoods, particularly when it comes to agriculture.
Firi says since January this year, the WFP has delivered food aid to 3 million people out of targeted 4.8 million. People are receiving cereals, pulses, vegetables, and a little cash to enable them to buy local foods. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Two South Sudanese men in a Kampala suburb were attacked by a mob protesting the arrest and detention of a group of independent and opposition politicians in Uganda. The two say they were returning home late last night when the crowd suddenly began chanting South Sudanese and throwing rocks and bottles at them. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from Kampala.
Last night's incident in the Kampala suburb of Bunga marks the third such attack on either Sudanese or South Sudanese citizens in the Kampala area over the past few days. The attacks come as security forces continue to battle rowdy supporters of detained politicians, including Bobi Wine. Speaking in Arabic, South Sudanese Daniel Bijang says he and his roommate, Jal James, had just stepped off a bus and were walking home when they ran into a group of more than 100 protesters.
When we got near to them, immediately surrounded us and started to beat us with bottles. We tried to defend ourselves, but they were too many.
James says in the confusion that followed, he got separated from his friend and could not tell which direction Bijang fled. Speaking in Arabic, James says he somehow fought his way out of the mob.
As I headed towards home, I did not notice that there was another group of people hiding in a dark corner. These are the ones who injured me. They threw rocks at me, and one landed on my face and broke three of my teeth. I then hit one of them hard. He screamed, and this made the others to run away.
Bruises are clearly visible all over James's body. Bijang says when he broke free from the mob, he called the police. Speaking in Arabic, Bijang claims the police did not respond, so he called a friend who came and picked him up from his hiding place.
I went straight to the hospital. That's when I found how that the pieces of broken glasses had caused a serious injuries to my left ear, which was still bleeding.
James says although the attack appeared to be spontaneous, they also felt as though they were targets, since the mob did not assault other foreigners, including Ethiopians and Eritreans who were on the street at the time.
They wrongly assumed that South Sudanese are supporting Museveni. I think that is why we are targeted. We are just ordinary citizens and have nothing to do with all this.
Bijang accused the South Sudanese embassy in Kampala of failing to protect its citizens amid growing concerns over their security in Uganda. Several calls to embassy spokesman David Amur went unanswered. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Kampala.
And now there is word from Kampala that Ugandan legislator Bobi Wine has been rearrested and charged with treason. The move occurred shortly after a military court dropped charges against him. The pop star turned lawmaker had been facing charges of illegal possession of firearms and ammunition. Catherine Nambi has the details from Kampala.
This morning, things were looking up for the musician turned legislator. A military court dropped charges against Robert Kyagulanyi, better known to fans as Bobi Wine. The military court had charged him with two counts of illegal possession of firearms on August 15th and detained him in a facility for over a week. In an early morning session court, prosecutor Major Raphael Magezi asked that the charges be withdrawn. But he said Kyagulanyi should be added to the list of others facing treason charges. The ruling was delivered by General Court Martial Chairman, Lieutenant General Andrew Guti.
Continuing to try the accused persons on the same facts of another case in a civil court will cause injustice to the accused. It is fair and equitable that the accused person be tried in civil court where he is to be charged with other suspects who are not before this court. This court hereby terminates the proceedings against Honorable Robert Kyagulanyi before this court. You are accordingly set free unless being held on other charges.
However, Chagulanyi's freedom was short-lived. He was immediately rearrested and taken to the Gulu Chief Magistrate's Court, where he was charged with treason and remanded to Gulu Prison. The treason charge was read to Chagulanyi by Yunus Ndiwalana, the Gulu Grade 1 Magistrate, who did not allow him to enter a plea.
The charge you are charged with is capital in nature. And this court has no jurisdiction to try it or to even allow you to speak any word pertaining to the charge. You are hereby remanded until the 30th day of August 2018 when the others will come.
People power! People power!
The magistrate allowed Kyagulanyi, who appeared to be in pain and walking with the use of crutches and the support of prison warders, to access medical treatment.
They are choosing a person, particularly, and others in similar condition are allowed to access their private doctors at any time, as and when. And those who cannot afford the private doctors are hereby directed to the prison authorities to take them to the necessary facilities to ensure that their health is guaranteed.
Prosecution accuses Kyagulanyi and 32 others, including four legislators, of unlawfully throwing stones at a convoy carrying President Yoweri Museveni. Authorities say the rear window of the vehicle was smashed in the attack. Samuel Walter Lubega is a Ugandan politician supporting the People Power Pressure Group. He says the continued detention of Kyagulanyi will not deter their movement.
Bobi Wine still gives us hope, because much as his body is weak, much as he was beaten, he was tortured, but his spirit is strong. Everyone could see him struggling to smile, struggling to wave to the people, because the spirit within him was still strong. People power will be exhibited everywhere across the country and abroad. We thank the people for that.
Protests calling for the release of Kyagulanyi have taken place across Uganda, in neighboring countries, and also among Ugandans in the diaspora. As the court cases were going on in Gulu, the Uganda police and the army were heavily deployed outside the homes of several opposition leaders. Museveni's major rival, Dr. Kizza Besigye, was arrested at his home and whisked to a police post. According to Kampala Metropolitan Police spokesperson Luke Owoyesigire, The action was taken in response to information that they were planning to incite violence. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. We'll hear more on the state of affairs in Uganda in an exclusive VOA interview with the former U.S. ambassador to Kenya, Zimbabwe, and Uganda. Stay tuned.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who has been the kindest person to you in your life?
I think my mom. She's kind, or she tolerates everything that I do. Whether it's being good or bad, she does tolerate. So she's kind to me.
To be honest, there are so many. I cannot really remember one particular one, but there's nobody bad, actually, to me. There's nobody bad, because if somebody does something wrong or bad to me, I think that person is trying to educate me on a particular thing.
The kindest person to me in my life is my friend, whom we have studied together from my secondary school to university life. We're still together. He's always honest, and he's so kind to me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Bobi Wine's detention and alleged severe beating in a military facility set off protests by his supporters, who were dispersed by tear gas and live ammunition this week. Young people have been a cornerstone of support for the 74-year-old Museveni, but that allegiance has been fading with Wine's rise. 78% of the country's population is under the age of 30. Johnny Carson, who has served as U.S. ambassador to Uganda, Zimbabwe, and Kenya, and as Assistant Secretary of State for the Bureau of African Affairs, is affiliated with the U.S. Institute of Peace. Carson spoke with VOA's Paul Alexander about the political atmosphere in Uganda and the challenges the country faces moving forward.
Uganda's youth bulge presents enormous economic and political challenges to Uganda. As more and more children go through school, become school leavers, start to look for jobs, and don't find them, the greater the both economic hardship and the political problems increase. Finding jobs for Uganda's growing youth population is going to be both an economic and a political challenge to the government. Government needs to find an effective way to generate more employment for university graduates, high school graduates, and those coming on to the market. These younger people are not interested, for the most part, in becoming farmers, and are looking increasingly for jobs in urban areas that don't exist.
The creation of the NDC took away some of the military support that Museveni had relied on. Now Wine has taken away some of the youth support. So where does his core lay right now?
President Museveni continues to have strong support in many parts of the rural areas of Uganda. His support can be found among the small farmers in the farming community across the country, many of whom have benefited from the infrastructure and economic improvements of the past two decades.
And what do you think Uganda needs to sort of continue and even speed up the growth that it has had in recent years?
Uganda has to make a concerted effort to attract more international investment, and also to generate more domestic private sector investment. It needs to develop and strengthen its small manufacturing sector, and it needs to find ways to provide employment for a increasingly large number of young Ugandans.
A top member of the rebel group South Sudan United Front arrived in Juba today to meet with President Salva Kiir. Sunday Djam, a spokesman for the group loyal to General Paul Malong, says Ambassador Tellar Deng is on what he calls a personal mission in Juba. He says Deng is not representing the South Sudan United Front in his meeting with President Kiir and denies reports that Malong's movement is facing defections.
He is in Juba because Kiir has invited him. He was invited by President Salva Kiir.
Ambassador Tellar Deng is a senior member of the South Sudan United Front. Why is he in Juba?
That is what we can't tell, but Kiir has sent to him a delegation who has come headed by Tellar Deng, who went to meet him in Nairobi. And they have extended to him the invitation from the president. And he has accepted it and then informed us. We know he was going and we cannot prevent him from going. More so, there are amnesties announced by the president just a day back or a week back.
What is the position of your group regarding the amnesty President Kiir announced 2 weeks ago?
Well, I am not saying our group is responding to the presidential amnesty, but a special invitation directed at Tellar Deng in his capacity as a leader has come, and he has accepted it. And this is not a decision by the movement. He decided at his personal level, he went to Juba to listen to Kiir. And we will know the content of their meeting after they have met. Now we cannot preempt. We don't know yet.
Ambassador Tellar Deng is a senior member of your movement. His return to Juba sends a message to your supporters. The last time I interviewed you, you had no kind words for President Salva Kiir. And now Tellar Deng is meeting with President Kiir. What has changed?
Well, there is nothing that has changed that much. A movement does not own people, and he does not stop them from extending their opinion if they have been requesting to say it. Therefore, we would want to tell the voice of America that Tellar went there, not that South Sudan United Front changed its position. But because he has been invited by Kiir and he went there in his capacity as Tellar Deng.
Is Ambassador Tellar Deng still a member of your movement?
He has not tendered in any resignation and he has not been dismissed by anybody. From now, we assume he is still part of us.
Since he is a member of your group, does it mean your movement is talking to President Salva Kiir?
There is nothing official and we cannot tell about that.
This is happening at a time when two members of your group spoke to the press 2 days ago in Juba saying they are no longer part of Paul Malong's movement.
Kindly, 2 days ago, there is none of our members that went to Juba. The idea that was circulated in the media is falsehood, as we have mentioned in our note to the public.
Ajang Lino and Chan Garang told the media in Juba that they are back to implement the peace agreement.
Well, Ajang was a member who came and joined Malong, and he opted to go back to Juba through a negotiated agreement with Akolkur in Uganda. That is not a factor with us. And the issue of Chan is actually not true. He has been attributed to us by the Bashu that he comes from a will, but in reality, he was a member of Riek Machar's movement, and he does not have to represent South Sudan United Front in his return.
Tell us what is happening within your camp.
Our camp is calmed and is organizing itself the way we have been organizing from that time, and you will hear about us very soon.
How can you say your camp is calm when a senior member like Tellar Deng is in Juba?
That is not the destruction of the movement, and that is not lack of calmness. He has been invited at his personal level, and we cannot detain him not to honor the invitation that he has accepted as a person.
That's Sunday Djam, spokesman for the South Sudan United Front loyal to rebel leader Paul Malong. He was speaking from Nairobi with my colleague John Tanza this past hour. Zimbabwe's Constitutional Court is set to rule tomorrow on a challenge to the legitimacy of the July 30th elections. The opposition says the ruling party, which officially won both the presidential and parliamentary polls, did not win fairly. Whatever the outcome, analysts and opposition supporters argue that the drama over the poll has damaged its credibility and will hurt the ruling party's legitimacy. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg with additional reporting from Columbus Mavunga in Harare.
This was supposed to be the poll that set Zimbabwe free. Free from the long oppressive rule of Robert Mugabe, free from the suspicions and violence that have come to characterize elections, and free from the expectation that the ruling ZANU-PF party would prevail, as it has in every election since its nation won independence in 1980. So far, the July 30th vote has delivered none of that. Opposition presidential candidate Nelson Chamisa filed suit in the nation's constitutional court, asserting that results showing incumbent Emmerson Mnangagwa won a razor-thin victory were not accurate, and that he was the actual winner. Chamisa's lawyers on Wednesday presented what they say is clear evidence that the results had been falsified. Zimbabwean author and academic Ibo Mandaza says he agrees with the opposition, but like many other analysts, he expects the court to dismiss the election challenge on Friday.
It's an indictment on the African state. It's a cynical response to the population, to the people of Zimbabwe. I am disgusted.
Paul Mangwana, ZANU-PF Secretary for Legal Affairs, said he would not comment on an ongoing case. But he and other party leaders have repeatedly expressed confidence in the poll. This was Mnangagwa's first presidential run. He took power in November after Mugabe resigned under pressure from the military.
We prepared well for our case. The rest is for the judges.
Opposition lawyer Dali Mpofu, one of two South African lawyers who were denied work permits and barred from the court, says what happens inside the court isn't the only challenge ahead for Zimbabwe.
Well, we can only say that the election, the freeness and fairness of an election is not only determined on election day. These issues of climate and the atmosphere, such as what is happening now, obviously contribute. And the only good thing is that the international community is watching. Because although we are here as lawyers to talk about legality, but there are also issues of legitimacy, which are not in our hands.
Mandaza believes the court's ruling will not be the end of the story.
Well, I think Mnangagwa's legitimacy is dented even more than ever before. If the intention was to sanitize and legitimize the coup, I think it has failed dismally. The crisis continues.
The court rules Friday afternoon, and according to the Constitution, the presidential inauguration will be held within 48 hours. Anita Pell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
That's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with a song, Dibi, by Ramata Diakite. Listening to Ramata Diakite with a song, Dibi. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening. We'll meet you back here tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.